So, Andrew, guess what? I'm going to put you right on the hot seat right away. I don't know if you know this, but we're talking about the Maple Leafs this morning.
Would that surprise you? Imagined.
Yeah, never happens. I'm sure you never listen to sports talk radio when you'd come into the city. We tend to do that a lot. You're no doubt aware, 9-9-4, this team is winless in its last five games. They had a really tough game in Pittsburgh on Saturday night. At this point, with the way this team is going, not performing to expectations, if you're in the room, what are the kinds of conversations that are being had? How are you trying to wade through this muck in a market that is obsessed with its team?
It's tough. I mean, I think that, you know, watching from a distance, and you watch on TV, and you can only pick up certain things. But you can see a lot, and you see a team that is quite obviously very, very good. They have a lot of good pieces. They have good talent. They have good potential, if you want to call it that. But, you know, you could tell that there's a fragility there, right? And something bad happens, or, you know, the little snowball of bad things just gets bigger and bigger really quickly, you know, throughout a game. And so I think, you know, when things like that happen during a season, it's tough to know where that line is between having another closed-door meeting and, you know, talking about things. And, you know, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody knows the system. Everybody knows their role, hopefully. and you know, I always kind of hated those, you know, multiple closed-door meetings where you talk about things. Because at the end of the day, you just got to go out and do. And I think that's, you know, you see good teams, you see bad teams. And I think sometimes the bad teams, you know, everybody knows, okay, I got to go do something. And then you get some very talented players that want to go out and do something, but they're doing it on their own, right? And they go off and they think they have to do something miraculous and they have to come up with this amazing individual effort. But you lose that, you know, team cohesion and what you're supposed to be doing it as a unit, right? And as a group, and everybody's just kind of splintered off, kind of all doing their own thing, trying to save the season, but not together, right? And so I don't know if that's what's happening. I'm not in the room. I have no clue. But I know on teams that I've been on that you start to get into that panic mode and everybody tries so hard because they care so much, but that doesn't work if you're all doing it individually.
So were you the guy that would usually say something in the room? I mean, I know you've been...
No, Chara was the guy. I mean, Chara was, you know... Well, Ginla and Chara probably both, you know, kind of equally as captains were unbelievable. They knew how to cut to the chase. And not only, you know, do it in a group setting, but pull, whether it was lines or D combinations, Chara especially would do this, but he would pull individual guys and have, like, really uncomfortable, you know, honest talks about, like, what was expected, you know, where they're at, what they need more. But it was that accountability from peer-to-peer as opposed to the coach pulling in the room or the GM pulling in the room. You know, when it's the captain, when it's Chara doing it, and you're having real conversations, you know, as teammates, that was pretty incredible, right? Because, I wasn't so good at that, you know? Like, I always really admired, you know, guys that could do that and have that real kind of some of those tough conversations. And it's not necessarily confrontational. It's just very honest, right? And so I always admired, you know, leaders like that that were able to do that and not kind of leave the big elephant in the room that everybody kind of knows is there, but everybody's too kind of scared to say it. And it doesn't have the same impact if it's coming from a coach or a GM.
Chara's reached that point where I think we almost all revere him. We shouldn't like him here in Toronto because he's been on three Bruins teams that have taken our team out in Game 7. Plays his 1,500th career game in Montreal week and a half ago. He gets a standing ovation from the Bell Center crowd. Everybody loves this guy. It must be 42 years old, Andrew, and he's still doing it. It must amaze you.
Well, the thing about Z, I mean, I go back a long way with Z. I played against him in junior in when he was up in Prince George, and he came to Edmonton actually and worked out during the summer before he went, you know, to the NHL and trained really hard in the same gym I was training at. We had the same agent, so I knew Z from a long ways back, and I didn't think he was going to be what he is because he wasn't a very pretty skater. He wasn't. He honestly
he's
wasn't
like 7 feet
good.
Tall on skates. Yeah,
I mean he was
he was in the minors too.
Yeah, he was the big guy that could like devastate you with a punch, but he wasn't like a Norris Trophy, you know,
but something clicked when he went to Ottawa, it feels. Everything's all right on the island.
You know what? Something didn't click. He just puts in hours and hours and hours of work, and he still does. He is, you know, the prototypical example of somebody who just puts in the hours and works and constantly evolves and adapts, you know, to what the game is, to, you know, to attack his weaknesses, whatever it is. But the dude works, and that's the secret. I mean, he just puts it in, he cares a lot, and he's incredibly passionate about it.
Andrew Ferentz is our guest, and we are live in the lobby of the Weston Harbor Castle Hotel in downtown Toronto at the Primetime Sports Management Conference and Trade Show. This is Lead Off with Ashley, who's on vacation, Ziggy and Scotty Mac, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How has the adjustment been for you in retirement? I think, and Ziggy has talked about this, for a former professional athlete, when it ends, it ends, and then you spin off into the next phase of life. You had a number of interests as a player. You were very open about your concern for the environment, etc. What have you been up to over the last little bit?
Well, I work for the NHL now, so, you know, at least I have something to do, which is and something that I really like doing. But I think that, you know, I was also blessed to have a long enough career where I could, you know, first of all, learn from other people, you know, whether it was, you know, Marty Jelena out in Calgary, or, you know, Recky, or, you know, there's a lot of guys that I played with, you know, Alexei Kovalev, that had multiple things going on outside of hockey and many interests. And so I learned a lot from those guys about, you know, how that was healthy, I think, you know, mentally while you're playing, you know, to have an escape from the room and from the ups and downs of hockey. But also to give you that confidence to know that, you know, man, if I blow up my knee tomorrow, I'm not completely lost in life, right? So, you know, even like while I was playing, you know, those kind of lessons from those guys gave me that confidence, and honestly, you know, obviously really helped me now after my career. But I was also blessed with a long enough career to plan things out. You know, if I would have been, you know, like a lot of guys where you play 3-4 years and then you're out, you know, you're at a different age, you're at a different time in your life, you don't have that, you know, luxury of kind of planning things out over a long career. So, you know, it's in some ways unfair for me to say, like, well, it worked for me. It's because it is different. You know, I look at myself, you know, if I had the average length career, it would have been probably a completely different story. So it is difficult. I think you run at, you know, 100 miles an hour as a player, and you're in some incredible situations, and there's not a lot of, you know, things afterwards that you can fulfill that kind of adrenaline rush. But you know, now, like, I don't feel like I missed anything. You know, I won. I played a bunch of games, met a lot of guys, had a lot of great memories. And now I have time to do all the things that, you know, I couldn't while I was playing. You know, I'm up snowboarding. I ride my bike all the time. I do some great work, and life is great.
You've been hanging out with this guy here.
I'm not a snowboarder. I'm a skier. I don't know. Okay. I've never gotten into snowboarding, but just back to that. So, director of social development for the NHL. What are some projects, I guess, you have coming up, or initiatives you're looking to kind of roll out right now?
Yeah, our department's pretty cool. We have about 24, 25 people in our department, and I always say that, I try to explain to my kids, like, what do I do? But we're one of the few departments at the league that really gets to take a really long look, like 10, 20-year look into where our game's at, where we're going, how we're going to grow the game, especially amongst, you know, young participants. And, you know, we have a very diverse group of cities where our clubs operate, and then all the spaces in between. How are we actually going to grow the game of hockey so that when people are, you know, watching 10, 20 years from now, you know, our game is healthy, and we have obviously a big push to get people to try the game and be participants. We know that fans are developed through participation, you know, quite often. And so whether that's in esports, whether that's in street hockey, whether that's in ice hockey, we kind of attack, you know, a lot of different angles on how you actually attract fans and attract people to your game. We have initiatives in schools, you know, through STEM learning that introduce hockey to, you know, 500,000 kids down in the States. So there's many different initiatives, I think, that, you know, you try to grow the game through. You know, my big focus is more on the street hockey and some of the ice hockey programming, and it's all based around developing really good experiences with hockey. You know, we're not trying to develop the next NHL players. You know, at the NHL, we don't use our resources to dump into elite hockey to, you know, mold, you know, a couple of really great players. We're trying to attack, you know, a whole bunch of players that, you know, go to the rink, have a great time, have an incredible experience with hockey, you know, because it's accepting, it's fun. You know, they're going into a situation where the, you know, the coaching curriculum is appropriate for them, where, you know, you're not learning X's and O's day two with your skates on. You're learning just how to have a great time and how to have fun. So, you know, we get to work with partners like USA Hockey, Hockey Canada, work on that kind of curriculum, that kind of nudge, you know, towards making sure that hockey is just a really good, safe, fun environment. And we believe that, you know, that'll be, you know, great for us, you know, in that 10, 20, 30-year window to keep our game nice and healthy. We have to diversify, you know, the people that are playing our sport and the people that are attracted to our sport, you know, to more accurately, like, represent our cities and our countries. Right now they don't, right? So, you know, I think we have to very intentionally kind of make sure that we're going into certain communities where we haven't been before. So it's a lot of fun. So that's my kids kind of start rolling their eyes when I get to that point.
But that's the synopsis.
But there's a lot going on. Yeah. So I love it.